Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Pacific Basin Shipping Q1 Trading Update Conference Call. Today's call will be presented by Mr. Mads Berglund, Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Andrew Broomhead, Chief Financial Officer for Pacific Basin Shipping. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Wednesday, the 22nd of April, 2015. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Mads Berglund. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for calling in and for your interest in our company. As mentioned, with me in the room here today, I have our CFO, Andrew Broomhead. Following our AGM today, we would like to give you a brief update on the first quarter trading, the latest supply and demand developments, and the company's position going forward. We will be brief and then, most importantly, give you a chance to ask any questions you might have. We made $8,100 per day in the first quarter on our Handysizes and $9,800 per day on our Handymaxes, outperforming the very weak first quarter spot index rates by about 60%. These earnings that we are making are slightly below our disclosed break-even levels on a P&L basis, but above EBITDA break-even levels. Market rates have generally been falling over the last 5 years to record low levels year-to-date 2015, but we have outperformed index rates by an average of about $2,300 per day over this 5.5-year period, thanks primarily to our business model with cargo contracts, scale, and high utilization rates of our fleet. G&A for the first quarter reduced to $14 million from $19 million in the first quarter last year, and our relatively small remaining towage activities were marginally profitable in the first quarter. For the remaining three quarters of the year, we are 46% covered at about $9,500 per day for Handysize and 53% covered at about $10,100 per day for Handymax. Vessel values have come down to very low levels, particularly for second-hand ships. Due to the uncertain market situation with slowing Chinese imports, we are managing for a continued weak market in the medium term. This means that we are neither buying nor long-term chartering ships, and all focus is instead on reducing costs, squeezing the maximum that we can out of our existing cargo system, and making a margin on short-term operating activity. In a strong market, everybody can get a cargo, but it is in times like this that we really need good people with skill, relationships, and good-performing, fuel-efficient ships. The recent market weakness can primarily be explained by much lower coal imports to China and by the continued reduction in bauxite and nickel shipments due mainly to the continuing Indonesian ban on exporting unprocessed minerals. We're also still in a slightly oversupplied market due to the large global dry bulk fleet growth during the period 2010 to 2012. There are some positive developments, such as more coal imports into India and construction material into the U.S., but the ton-mile effect of this is overshadowed by the large reduction of coal imports to China. In the longer term, though, we remain positive about minor bulk demand, such as agricultural imports to China, and expect minor bulks to peak later in the economic cycle as compared to major bulks such as iron ore. The only positive thing with the weak market and the negative sentiment is that the dry bulk fleet growth is slowing and new vessel ordering has pretty much come to a complete stop. Scrapping is up significantly and a lot of Chinese shipyards are closing down. These are market self-correcting factors, and the global net fleet growth has actually been flat for the last 2 months. It will take some time before these factors have an effect on the market, but it is important to remember that this is a cyclical market, and upturns are typically driven by unexpected events. The group had $363 million of cash at the end of 2014, borrowings of about $1 billion, and net borrowings ratio to net book value of the assets of 40%. It's important for us to plan for the repayment of our $210 million convertible bond in April 2016, about a year from now, and also with the current weak market for the put to us and the repayment also of our $124 million convertible bond in October 2016. So we are issuing a new convertible bond, and the timing was partly opportunistic since our share price went up from about 250 to 3 Hong Kong dollars, but it is to help fund the repayments of the existing convertible bonds that we are issuing this new $125 million convertible bond due 2021 with a coupon of 3.25% and a conversion price of 4.08 Hong Kong dollars per share. This conversion price is 37.5% above the share price on the day that was 2.97 Hong Kong dollars a share. This convertible bond is already placed in the market on these terms with the investors committed, but it's subject to shareholder approval, and we will be having an SGM, a special general meeting for this purpose that is planned for around May 22nd. Issuing this new convertible bond is consistent with managing for a continued weak market in the medium term and to make sure that we safely sail through this period of weak market conditions. To wrap up this introduction, I would like to highlight that we have transformed the company over the last 3 years from a balance sheet with about $1.6 billion of long-term assets, of which $1 billion was in our core dry bulk business, and $600 million 3 years ago in three other businesses, RoRo, towage, and terminals, where we were small and marginal players without any competitive edge. We were already strong in handy dry bulk back then, but we were relying very much on chartered-in ships with only 25% of our fleet owned. It has been a painful process, and as you have seen in last year's P&Ls, but we have now sold out of these other activities, and instead we now have about $2 billion invested in our core and strong Handysize and Handymax business, including new buildings, with owned ships comprising a significantly larger portion and getting close to about 50% owned ships of our fleet. In spite of more total assets, we have significantly lower G&A. We are now well structured, in my view, with all our resources, both management and capital, fully focused on our core dry bulk business, where we have a strong platform and competitive edge as the world's largest Handysize owner and operator. Thank you very much again for calling in, and we now would like to invite you to ask any questions you may have.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question today, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Your first question today comes online of David Sextons from Lloyd's List. David, please go ahead.
Oh, hello. I'm just interested in finding out to what extent can Australia replace Indonesia as a source of smaller metals such as bauxite and nickel ore?
Yes, that's a good question. Australia is the main replacement country instead of Indonesia for bauxite. Not much nickel, but bauxite is coming out of Australia. But it's not making up for all of the lost Indonesian trade. It's about 50% of what it used to be, and a majority of the bauxite into China is coming from Australia. Not much nickel. The nickel is coming primarily out of the Philippines, but not too much now because it's a rainy season there. So it's also, you know, seasonally very low at this point. So there's been replacement of the Indonesian nickel and bauxite, but not making up more than roughly 50% of what it used to be.
Thank you.
Your next question today comes from the line of Paul Dewberry from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Paul, please go ahead.
Hi, afternoon. Thanks for the call, guys. Just a question, really, with your forward cover. I mean, obviously, you've got around half of your remaining days for the rest of the year locked in at effective rates even higher than you achieved in first quarter. I'm just really wondering, in terms of the split, is that heavily skewed to 2Q, or is that generally spread pretty evenly through the remaining three quarters of the year?
Thanks, Paul. It's generally always higher percentage cover in the nearer future than in the more distant future. So yes, most of it, not most of it, but you know, it's higher cover in the Q2 than in Q3 and Q4.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question today comes online of Karthik Shapella from Buena Vista Fund. Karthik, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity. A couple of questions from my side. Firstly, is there like any floor level below which we probably don't want to be covering our revenues for 2015 for both the Handy Size and the Handy Max? And the second question is on the new CB issuance. How do we see the coupon rate on this new CB at 3.25? It seems to be fairly high relative to our previous CB issuance. And I'm also curious to understand why the management did not explore other options like maybe bank debt, which will probably not have a dilutive impact. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a floor at which we will not take cargo contracts? You know, each cargo contract is kind of evaluated on its own because it may be a very, very important ingredient in a chain of cargo, so to speak. You know, our signature feature in the company, so to speak, is a very high utilization rate, right? So we don't have a specific dollar per day number. There may be a cargo contract that's incredibly important and complements, you know, other cargoes, and we may be willing to go lower on such a contract than another one. But you know, we're really at these levels now where you know, we hesitate to take cover, and competition is extremely stiff for cargo contracts these days. Shippers are getting used to the low spot rates, unfortunately, and they shy away from entering into cargo contracts and prefer to pay the even lower spot rates. We're proactively trying to encourage them to take cargo contracts and also offer to help them lock in the lower bunker contracts, right? Because it's historically extremely low total transportation cost for the shippers now. Not only are freight rates all-time low, also bunker prices have come down with almost half. So that's as specific as we can be there on the floor on cargo cover. On the CB coupon, you know, we wanted to push up the conversion price a bit higher than normal to limit the dilution to existing shareholders. So you are right, the coupon is a bit higher than on the previous ones, and the reason is that, you know, we're at a low point in the shipping cycle, and you don't want to issue any equity related instrument necessarily at this point, but at least we wanted to push up the
the conversion price. We there's really no regular bonds available to shipping companies. They would be extremely expensive, very, very high interest rate. And, bank mortgages we are exploring. And, Andrew, maybe you want to comment a bit more on that. But we have disclosed that we are also doing, bank mortgages on the unfinanced secondhand ships. But, you know, you should note, right, that outstanding is $334 million of convertible bonds. And this bond is only, so to speak, 125, right? We will do bank financing as well, but we felt we at least should do some convertible bond at this time to safeguard our cash situation and the ability to repay these convertibles in 16. Note that the 18 bond may not be put to us, right? But we have to plan for that. It would be irresponsible not to plan for having to repay that 18 bond in 16 when the owners have the right to put it to us.
Put it to us. Okay. Got it. Okay. Thank you very much, and all the best.
Thank you.
Your next question today comes to the line of Raymond Yap from CIMB. Raymond, please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. I'd just like to ask a couple of questions. One is that, Matt, you mentioned just now that you wanted to reduce costs. Could you tell me how that is going to be achieved? And you also mentioned that another strategy you have is to try and get a margin on short-term chartering activity. Is that always possible, or is it sometimes happen that your short-term chartering strategy works to the negative, as in you do actually make a loss, or is it almost always a guaranteed profit? So I just want to understand the mechanics of that. Also, you talked about the towage operations being marginally profitable in the first quarter. I'd like to ask if this profit is sustainable. Is the structure of the business now in such a way that we should no longer be expecting the losses that we saw in the previous years? And finally, you also mentioned that the rates that you have locked in so far for the first quarter and for some parts of the second to the fourth quarter were actually below the P&L break-even, the cost that you disclosed on a daily basis for 2013. Yes, I can see it's below those costs. But, of course, your charter costs will also come down with a weaker market, as well as whatever you've locked in is also at a lower level relative to the year before. So would it be fair to say that perhaps you were sounding a little bit alarmist on that? Thank you.
All right. On the cost reductions, we are focusing on that across the board. That goes through our whole P&L, so to speak. G&A cost reductions have been possible due to reducing overall senior management cost and by getting out of the non-core activities. It's easier to manage one business unit, the dry bulk, than four business units that we had 3 years ago with Ro-Ro and towage and terminals. We're focusing a lot on reducing administrative costs. We are not reducing on customer efforts and attentions. In this market, as I mentioned, you really need good people to get cargoes, and you need the infrastructure that we have, the relationships and the cargo contract and skilled people. So we're trying hard to save on the right things and not on the wrong things. But we're trying to use our scale to lower our costs of lubricants, of our insurances, and also, of course, on our charter-in contracts. We're trying hard to improve the terms of our chartering contracts. We're also redelivering, we're not extending long-term or medium-term charters, and everything that we take in is short, and as you mentioned, that lowers the total charter-in cost. on the question on the margin on the operating activity. You know, in the ideal world, we make a margin on that in strong market as we do in short markets. You know, it can go wrong at times, but you know, it's possible to make a margin there also in a weak market, because we combine a cargo and a ship. So we have disclosed that, you know, we are continuing with our short-term charters. You should not expect that to disappear, because we're using our cargo relationships, etc., to make a margin also in this very weak market. But it's medium and long-term ships are not extended, and we're not growing the overall fleet anymore. Towage, you're asking what does the future have to bring there. A majority of the remaining towage, as you know, is in the Middle East. I'm not going to make a specific forecast there, because it's difficult to do, but you know, we are marginally profitable there. We also do have, we do continue to benefit a little bit from a few remaining charters in Australia, and they will expire. But you know, the Middle East market is the most important going forward, and we have two activities there. We're both in the construction market, which remains fairly strong there. We're with tugs and barges carrying aggregate, etc. So they're building a lot of stuff in the Middle East, and that market remains fairly healthy. We also have a few anchor handlers supporting the oil and gas market, and the oil and gas towage market in Middle East is weak due to the low oil price, and a lot of oil and gas projects in the Middle East are put on hold. So we're kind of in one market that's reasonable and another market that's weak at the moment. But, you know, you should expect a lot less volatility, and you know, we're seeing the risk of big losses there much reduced due to our repositioning of this business. It's much smaller, and what we have left is in the Middle East. And in the Middle East, we have international crews on the tugs, and those are at you know, much, much lower costs than in Australia. In Australia, you have Australian crews, which are, you know, five times as high as international crews. So if you don't have employment in Australia, you're very exposed, right? And we are out of that market significantly. Your last question was about rates that we have, the forward cover we have, and that's lower than break even. I was really referring to our actual earnings in the first quarter when I was referring to lower than break even, etc. The future, as you correctly point out, it's only the locked in portion, and both our revenue and our cost will change depending on how the market rates will be, right? So revenue is, you know, the spot portion that's coming in is coming in at a lot lower levels than the fixed rates. So revenue will be lower with what we know now, and costs will also come down. So my intention was not to sound alarmist, but just to be factual and informative and factual on what cover we have. We do also disclose, as you know, our inward charter commitments and what costs they are at, right? So, but that's also only the known portion, and we then have index ships and short-term charter-ins that's now coming in at lower levels. So you're correct in saying that the cost will also come down a bit. That's about as much as we can say there, I think. Does that answer most of your questions?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Thanks.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question today, it's star one on your telephone. Your next question comes on the line of David Sexton from Lloyd's List. David, please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Just a quick question. What opportunities do you see by way of agricultural commodities going for in the next 12 months or so?
Yeah, I think we're optimistic about continued long-term growth in China's imports of it's primarily soybeans that they're importing, and we think that will go on. You know, they're changing their eating habits in China, continued urbanization. They don't have enough land and water to grow their own crop, and they need to import in an increased fashion going forward, in our view. So yes, that's we're positive and optimistic about continued imports of agricultural products to China, also of other minor bulks, you know, such as nickel and copper, etc., because it tends to go into more consumer-driven products than the major bulks, and it's less, it's not only infrastructure-driven, so to speak, it's also driven by their by consumer-driven products.
Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question today, it's star one on your telephone. There are no further questions on the line, and that does conclude our conference for today. We thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.